Blog Talk Radio.
What do you know? What do you know? What do you know?
The birds and the bees are wise to the light.
What do you know?
So they took to the trees and took to the sky.
What do you know?
On top of the chain and safe from the rain.
What do you know?
What you know about the ways of the underside?
What do you know?
I bought a hot shot jet from an old Van Guinea.
What do you know?
Cause they're hip to the bone and hip to the light.
What do you know?
And yep, but you ask cause you ain't got a penny.
What do you know?
What you know about the waves on the underside?
What do you know?
One hot shot cat from a North Bank Guinea.
What do you know?
Ain't it up with your ass cause you ain't got a penny.
What do you know?
Dropping bombs from above cut you all down to size.
What do you know?
Cause the hip to the ball and the hip to the
what do you know?
Yeah, the streets rose in two perfect ways in the night.
What do you know?
One crashes on my left and one on my right. It's all fire and brimstone, baby, so let's go outside.
What do you
it's
know?
It's all fire and brimstone, baby. I got my brand new pistol, baby.
What do you know?
One hot shot cat from a North Bay Guinea.
Okay, how are you doing?
I'm fine. Hello and welcome to Logicast. Logicast is a weekly podcast / radio show. We don't really know what we are. Airs every Thursday at 8 o'clock p.m. Central Standard Time, 9 o'clock p.m. Eastern Standard Time. You can check us out on the Book of Faces at / Logicast. We talk about politics, religion, skepticism, science, economics, history, philosophy, everything. Everything and anything that we're annoyed about throughout the week. So I actually got an email about our last show. The one on multi-level marketing. And interestingly enough, the this person, I'll forward it to you later, but this person actually went through like two or three of our points and tried to debunk them. And then at the end of it, tried to sell me on the on their multi-level marketing scheme. It was brilliant. It was actually, I was like, hey, yes, thank you for doing that. You kind of proved my point. It was beautiful. It was,
well, how were the points? What did they say?
Multi-level marketing shit. Basically, they tried, one of the biggest things they had a problem with was the idea that you could fail because markets are limited. And the idea was, or the argument rather was that you can't fail at multi-level marketing if you just care enough and work hard enough. And they pointed to like three or four people. And I went and researched these people, and all of them were at the sort of like the ground floor, or they were a part of like this very small minority who actually did succeed. And, you know, I sort of responded, and I was like, well, what about the millions of people that did not succeed at this? And, of course, they never responded back. But it was a good opportunity for them to try to pitch me their multi-level marketing scheme, which I thought it was actually brilliant. I mean, I was like, see, this is what we were talking about. This is great that every conversation sort of devolves into you trying to pitch people, you know, the opportunity to, or rather taking the opportunity, regardless of the conversation, to pitch people your multi-level marketing scheme so you can make more money.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I guess they thought that I would just buy that bullshit and I would come on the air and be like, hey, guys, you have no idea. You're missing out on this, you know, wonderful opportunity to spend $700 and, you know, convince all of your fucking friends to, you know, to buy into this bullshit. So, remind me after the show and I'll send that to you because it's actually pretty funny.
Okay.
But anyway, okay. So what annoyed you this week? Let's start there.
What annoyed me this week? I was reading an article about a parent or a person, a concerned citizen. This has actually made me mad for a couple of days now. I'm continuing to be mad. There was a woman who drove with her four-year-old to a store, and he was in his car seat, and he was playing a video game, and he didn't want to go in. And so she left him in the car in a 50-degree weather for about 3 minutes in view of her when she was inside the store. And somebody was standing next to her car filming him playing his video game, strapped into his seat in the locked car, on her cell phone, and waiting for the mom to get back, which the mom came back, and she did barely even notice this person because they were standing far away, and she just heard, bye now. And she was on her way to the airport with her family at the time. His headset had broken, and she was trying to get him a new one. So this person took that phone video to the police, and this woman was subsequently arrested for contributing to the delinquency of a minor. And
I'm literally speechless.
Yeah, and of course, the first thing that came up was that all of our parents would have been arrested many times over for just having kids, because a lot of us waited in the car. And of course, the concern is kids left in a car by people who are in a bar drinking when it's 80 degrees outside will cook to death and die. Some of them do that every single year. People who are, you know, in a hurry, they're not usually the ones to drop off their kids. They leave their kid in the back seat because they drop off the preschooler and forget they have the baby. I mean, this kind of horrible shit happens all the time. I get it.
Right.
But even the woman who at the time was like, oh, whatever, just, all right, just stay here, I'll be right back, is now going, it was a terrible mistake, I made a terrible mistake. And then she's kind of going back and forth in the article going, well, I guess it was a lapse in judgment or whatever. And the reason they couldn't get her for like child endangerment is because it's not illegal to do that. and so I just became furious at this person I don't know what the idea is there. Are you trying to protect the child who's playing his leapfrog game? Are you what are you doing? You're just kind of awful, I think. And in case anyone's listening, how could you leave your child in the car? People do it all the time. I didn't do it when my son was an infant. A lot of times he'd be sleeping in the car, and I know if I pick up the car seat, he'd wake up. But I couldn't bring my, even if I'm going to the dry cleaner and like can see him completely, but like I just couldn't do it. But I understand why you do it. I do. I get it. And the idea of calling the cops on this poor woman, and I still understand, but the cop, why didn't the cops just go, yep, there's that? I don't get it. It's sort of like that, this woman in New York who lets her son ride the subway. Do you know this one? She
yes,
made him a laminated
yes,
card that says, free range child. I am not lost. I'm a free range child.
Yes, I did. I did read that.
Yeah, and he has to hand the card to people all the time because they come up to him, oh, are you all right? Where is your mother? So things have changed a lot since I was a child, and a lot of those things that have changed are good, but not all of them. Not all of them, Jared.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of had a different upbringing. I was raised on kind of a farm. I mean, that's really what you would call it, is a farm. I mean, we had cows and we baled hay and, you know, so when I was like 12, you know, I was riding my bicycle into town and hanging out with my buddies and
right.
No parental supervision.
And how old
and
were you when you learned how to drive the three-wheeler? That's what I want to know, the three-wheeler.
I drove my first three-wheeler when I was, like, probably 7 or 8. You know, we had
it's a rite of passage for a 7-year-old.
You know, we had motorcycles. I mean, you know, dirt bikes. You know, we had four-wheelers. BB guns, for sure. My brother actually once shot my dad in the back with a BB gun on that. you know. I mean, I fired my first real gun, and I'm using air quotations because technically a BB gun is a gun.
Yes,
that's the definition of a gun. But I fired my first real gun with real bullets when I was probably like 8 or 9. You know, so none of that stuff's really a big deal. My dad was in law enforcement before he became a prosecuting attorney, so. He knew how to handle guns, knew how to direct us how to handle guns. And I mean, it was always carried out in a very sort of safe environment. I share things on Facebook sometimes and people get the idea that I'm against guns. For example, I'm not against guns. I'm against stupid people owning guns, which is a different conversation altogether. But yeah, I mean, we never had that problem when I was growing up. You know, we would never have parents who would come out and be like, where's your mom or where's your dad? Usually they would only pull that card when you were being an asshole and they wanted to call your mom
right.
or your dad, you know,
right.
because again, you were being an asshole, you know, so had a couple of those situations and my dad needless to say, was not very happy when he received those calls, though he probably received a lot more of them than, you know, when he had my brother and I, than he, you know, he thought he would probably encounter. So, interestingly enough,
yeah,
you know, I didn't mean to interrupt, but I've talked to you about this before. You know, my dad and I don't really have like a great relationship. It's very, it's very fragile. It's been fragile for the past few years. But I actually called him last night, and we had a really good conversation. And you know, we kind of talked about some things, and you know, aired out some grievances. And he told me issues he had with me, and I communicated issues I had with him. And you know, we both kind of. Discuss how to move forward, that we both want a relationship with the other one.
Okay.
How to get there is really the difficult part, I guess. But, you know, not that I'm treating you like my therapist or anything. I don't have a therapist. But, you know, anyway, that's sort of tangential to the conversation. Do I get to talk about what annoyed me this week? Is that okay?
Yeah, please do.
All right. So there have actually been a couple of things that annoy me this week. Do you know who David Friedman is?
No, I don't think so.
All right. David Friedman is, like, really big in, like, the anarcho-capitalist world. And I know this is sort of, like, beating up on libertarians and anarcho-capitalists, kind of my whipping boy here lately. And it's only because their worldview is poisonous, as far as I can tell. I think many of them legitimately believe that, you know, that reducing government will, you know, increase people's freedoms. Fact of the matter is that there's no good evidence to suggest that will occur. You know, there are...
It depends on how you define freedom. Yeah.
Exactly. Well, I wasn't going to get into that argument because I can make an entire show out of the way they define freedom. I mean, you know, there's no freedom in, for example, me being unemployed and starving to death. Like, that does not increase my freedom by being able to do that. In fact, you know... Those of us, and I even hate to call it on the left because I'm a utilitarian, so really I identify that I am on the left because, you know, in terms of labeling, that's how you would classify me. But I'm a utilitarian, and the fact of the matter is that it does not, you know, it does not increases pain, does not increase pleasure to die because I might get a few more dollars on my paycheck every week. You know, in fact, the entire idea is sort of preposterous. But this guy is like a, you know, he's you know, he's penned a few books. He's, you know, been invited and he has presented a lot of arguments at multiple conferences that follow these sort of free society kind of people. And it's really weird. He was asked a question. He did an AMA on Reddit, and he was asked the following question. Someone said, "Should I be worried about global warming?" Now, remember, this guy is a legitimate smart person. Like, he has a doctorate in theoretical physics. Like, the guy, he doesn't practice theoretical physics. Like, it's not, you know, I mean, it's what he got his doctorate in, but, you know, he doesn't do any research. He only comments on, you know, issues of economics now. But someone said, "Should I be worried about global warming?" And his response was, "I don't think there is any good reason to expect that anthropogenic global warming will produce bad effects on net, let alone catastrophic effects."
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he literally said that. And the reason why I got so mad about that is because all too often I see people who will obfuscate the truth, obfuscate the evidence, because their worldview demands that that's what they do. Like, in order for their worldview to personally make sense to them and to make sense to the people that they're, you know, that they're talking to, they have to be able to figure out a way around, kind of around the conclusions that are, you know, the consensus conclusions. And we've seen this, for example, with regard to mythicism, right? You know, I mean, we see this all the time with regard to creationists. You know, Holocaust deniers. I mean, essentially what it is that my worldview is so important, so necessary and sacred to me that I have to figure out a way to explain all these things, you know, by either disregarding their significance, claiming that they're not real, or just outright ignoring them, and I get to ignore them by saying that, you know, it's all some sort of a conspiracy. Sometimes those three things, those three characteristics, factors, actually fall into, or actually overlap one another. It kind of depends on the person you're talking about, and it depends on the camp with regard to this worldview in which they fall in. So,
yeah.
for David Friedman, for example, because he's an anarcho-capitalist, there's no solution in anarcho-capitalism to get rid of, you know, or to stop or to halt or to reduce global warming. There's just not. You know, and without getting into the more sophisticated arguments, like with regard to Tragedy of the Commons, the overall point here is that he rejects the idea that, you know, anthropogenic, you know, global warming is, you know, is necessarily bad, because if he can't find a solution inside of his worldview, then it might turn people off from buying his books and buying his shitty arguments. You know, but I read that and I argued with a couple of people over it, and the point wasn't about whether or not he was wrong, because he's obviously wrong. Demonstrably he's wrong. The point was, is he smart enough to know that he's wrong, or is he so attached to his worldview, despite the fact that he's very, very well educated, that he tries to justify his worldview by explaining this little thing away, explaining this obvious contradiction to it away. You know, and that's the method in which he's chosen to accomplish that task, you know, is by, you know, basically saying, yeah, I think anthropogenic global warming is real, but I don't think that it's actually going to do anything bad to the environment. That's essentially what he said.
Interesting.
It is. And I mean, you get these, you know, you get sort of like three different kinds of people in these arguments, right? Like you get, with regard to libertarians and ANCAPs in particular, like you get those who claim to be skeptical, about, and I'm using air quotes for sure, double, triple, quadruple air quotes, because they're not skeptics, you know, about climate change. You know, they really reject it. They call themselves skeptics, but they reject it. They don't accept climate change. Then you have others who accept that it's happening, but don't believe the dangers of what the prediction, you know, the models are suggesting is going to happen. You know, and then you get the small minority of people inside of those camps who say that, yes, it is happening, the danger is real. No, I don't know how my worldview is going to take care of that. I actually like group number three, because at least they're fucking honest. So
yeah,
it's very annoying. It's extremely upsetting, and I, to be completely honest, arguing with these people, sometimes it feels like I'm just wasting my time, you know, like
yeah.
Arguing with someone who legitimately believes that the world is 6,000 years old. Like, there's no amount of evidence I can personally give you that is going to convince you that this thing that you believe, which I'm sorry to say, is fucking crazy, because it is. It is crazy to believe that the world is 6,000 years old. Nothing I'm going to be able to say is going to convince you otherwise, especially if you're so deeply rooted in that, you know, in that idea, that it makes up your entire worldview. The people that you can convince otherwise are the ones who were taught this, but it has no impact on their current worldview. Those are the people that you can reach. It's very, very difficult to reach the people who this makes up an important part of their worldview. You know, this makes up a certain part of even who they are to a large extent. I mean,
yeah,
so
I
anyway, understand. Not to pontificate, which I know that's what I'm doing. But, okay, so I know you always get upset when we spend so much time talking to one another about what annoyed us, usually because I go off on a tangent. All right, so let's get to the point of the show. Why are Americans so ignorant about sex? I'm going to give you the floor, because I know you have a lot to say on this.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to talk about abstinence-only education. I've been pouring through a ton of
policy and studies about this, which I'm not going to bore everybody with, I promise. I'm just going to do the very brief highlights. But it kind of goes beyond that. We have, because of our sort of puritanical weirdness, we have all sorts of hang-ups, culturally speaking, as a whole, and issues and weirdnesses, and it sort of starts not just with, you know, educating people in their adolescent years, but way before that. You know, I have a five-year-old, and they start asking these questions, and I've seen people absolutely panic. That's not a scary question. If they ask you how your food gets digested, will you panic? I don't know if people are imagining that their kid is suddenly asking them about something that is going to have to cause them to explain, you know, BDSM porn or something. That's not usually the question. Where do babies come from is usually the question. The answer is usually pretty simple, especially if you're talking to your aunt, giving someone an answer that is appropriate for their age and answers the question they asked and not some imagined question that you're afraid they might ask you someday. Which, by the way, you have to deal with that if you're afraid they might ask you that someday. So what happens is we get the idea that this is bad and scary, and of course then we have this huge section of the country who believes it is bad and dirty and filthy and naughty and and you shouldn't do it and you're a bad person if you do it, until you have a little ceremony with a guy wearing a special outfit, and then it's great. So that how isn't that fucked up? That's fucked up. And so this problem starting when we're little, with people being even nervous about saying basic things about anatomy. And then education starts, often, you know, they start doing they used to call it in our school, the maturation program, starting when you're about 9 or 10. They take the boys out. I don't know if they still do this. I actually looked this up and couldn't. Like, it depends on what you're looking at, because everything is so wildly variant when it comes to the education system in this country. But they took the boys out, so the boys wouldn't learn anything about menstruation. Why would you do that? I don't understand. And then whatever they were teaching the boys, the girls didn't learn that. So you have that problem. And then people don't even understand what their own anatomy is happening. And I've, as I've said to you before, I've had many discussions with grown women who are sexually active people who don't understand their own anatomy, because no one ever taught them what is all that stuff. Where does it go? What is happening here? What is, you know, where is your clitoris? Like, people don't understand what their clitoris is, and they might be able to find it, but they don't know what it looks like in, you know how long a real clitoris is, right? But internally speaking, or
that's
what the hood
big.
Is, or how you, yeah, it is. Or how you work it, or what, you know, what the G-spot is, or whether it really exists, and what your urethra is for, and how it's not the same as with guys, it's not the same hole. I mean, I have to explain this stuff to grown women who are not stupid. Some of them are college educated. And the same thing happens with their own, you know, not just their anatomy, but their physiology and their cycles, and how does ovulation work, and where does it, all that stuff. We get a very basic, if you're lucky, overview of how that stuff works when you're 12, and maybe another sort of refresher when you're 15. We don't talk about any sort of, you know, how to function sexually as a healthy person, or how the other person's anatomy works, or how sexual pleasure works. I mean, that would just be unheard of. Whereas in Europe, that's just totally normal part of a lot of different education, because it's just part of life and it's important to learn about it. But apparently here, we don't want to do that. So you end up with people who don't know how to, you know, how to even go about trying to make somebody else happy in bed. And they certainly don't want to talk about it. And
one of the,
you know, with,
can I interject real quick?
Yeah, of course.
One of the things that I want to actually bring up is that historically speaking, children used to witness their parents having sex.
Sure.
I mean,
in many parts of the world, they still do.
Right. I mean, and the logic behind that, or rather the evidence behind that is that basically, and this happened pretty much a long time in, or for an extended period of time throughout Europe, because homes were small. So, you know, so there
and
usually was like...
in the same room.
That's right. Everybody's not sleeping in the same room, sleeping in the same bed, and mom and dad were having sex while the kids were in the bed, and it wasn't a big deal back then because there was nowhere else for them to go. Like, there was no expectation of privacy when it came to family.
Right,
you know,
and I have a friend who grew up in Central America who had that experience when she was a child, and she's my age, so it's not like
that's
it
right.
doesn't
and it's,
still happen
yeah,
all
and
the
it's, place. It's just not, it wasn't a big deal back then. When Protestantism kind of came along, you know, and you have to remember, you can't just blame it on the religion itself. You also have to understand that Protestantism sort of started growing up, no offense, started growing up as, you know, merchant capitalism kind of started taking off. And in a large part, people were able to, we have more resources, specifically in Europe. Europeans have more resources, so they could build bigger homes. Bigger homes equal more rooms equal privacy. You know, kids no longer had to stay in mom and dad's, you know, bed with them because they could have their own bed. You know, and Protestantism sort of just followed along that. And, you know, I mean, a lot of it, correlation doesn't necessarily imply causation, but I've read a lot of good arguments that suggest that, you know, Protestantism had something to do with the idea that you should have multiple rooms, but that, you know, it anthropologically kind of grew on its own, that this was sort of an idea that evolved over time. And that's actually a really, really important point to make. And the reason why it's so important is that prior to, and I don't know, like, I don't think that it's necessarily, I mean, we have certain ways that we view things. I don't think it was unsophisticated at the time for people to, you know, for mothers and fathers, couples in general, heterosexual couples, to have sex in front of their children. Only because at the time, by the way, I don't mean that in any kind of negative or degrading way. I mean, the way those societies tended to homosexuals. Anyway, you know what I mean.
No, I know. That it's not always true, but usually a family union would be a mother and father a procreating couple that had kids in the house.
Correct.
Yes.
Correct.
You're right.
Procreating couple. Yes, that's actually a very good way to put it. Yes, that's what I was trying to get at. That actually had, you know, it wasn't a big deal to them. And, you know, and yes, I mean, it is ancient. And now we have privacy, private rooms and doors and that kind of thing. And it's a big deal to us that we do have that. That wasn't available back then. And it wasn't really a big deal. At least it didn't appear to be a big deal considering the fact that our species survived. And it seems like they were probably okay. You
well,
know,
yeah,
the
I mean, they grew up to have,
sex. I mean,
you know, partners themselves and got married and had their own kids. I mean, that's just was kind of how things were going. I don't think either of us is arguing that that's what we should be doing here. The point is, the more, at least I think your point
no,
is.
No, not at all.
Mine,
yeah, no, yeah. Not at all. The only point I was making is that, you know, it's not as though this is like an ancient tradition or anything. You know, that
right.
I mean, that this idea about, you know, I mean, not exposing children to sex, for example, or sex education, or exposing them to the realities of sex is somehow
exactly.
like an ancient tradition. Yeah, like it's
right.
not. I
mean,
or,
you
mean
doing
pretty much
that, yeah.
I've only
like,
done this for the past 300 years, so.
Yeah, and based on our own, you know, sort of weirdnesses, not based on any evidence that it's good for children to not know anything about sex or think of it as something that is dirty that they're not supposed to talk about or think about. And it's interesting because you were saying, you know, you had a decent sex education in public school and through, and the Title X money started coming in for matching funds for abstinence-only education. Things went quickly to hell in that respect. And what happened was, in order to get this money, if you read the requirements, they're pretty chilling. Because
one of the requirements is that you insist on abstinence until marriage, that you teach that children should be abstinent until marriage. You are also not allowed to teach them about contraception unless you were only emphasizing the failure rate of contraception, which, as you can imagine, is grossly misleading and especially opened the door for a lot of these religious organizations that were getting government money to teach in public schools to give not just limited information about contraceptive failure, but absolute lies about contraceptives, including things like condoms don't prevent HIV, and, you know, they fail most of the time, and in fact, birth control pills don't prevent pregnancy. I mean, I was reading through some of this stuff, and I was just horrified. If I had a kid at that school, I mean, oh my gosh, I would have come in with a torch. It was crazy. And so they're doing this because they're like, oh, worried about the teen pregnancy rates, which were at the time already dropping, still are. But they are, ours are the highest in the industrialized world by far. You know, depending on what you read, it's about 1 in 8, some 1 in 6 girls will be pregnant before they're 20. That doesn't mean they will have a baby. But a lot of those pregnancies end in abortion. The problem is they're not having protected sex, and so a huge percentage of them, 30-something percent, are infected with HPV, which I have to say, compared to my generation, which is closer to 40, is better. It's not great. Happily,
hey man, even people like Rick Perry get things right every now and then. One of the best things he ever did for the state of Texas was to, institute the requirement for young girls to receive the Gardasil shot, Gardasil vaccine. I can't stand the man. Little anecdote. Someone I know, his son is actually a Texas Ranger. Very, very smart man. And he has told me that Rick Perry is one of the dumbest fucking people that he's ever met. But anyway, not that my little anecdote's worth anything. But, I mean, broken clock twice per day, one of the best things he ever did for Texas, period. One of the best things, my opinion, done in America, with regard to, to medical health. Anyway, go ahead.
Well, it is wonderful. It is a wonderful vaccine, and I'm thrilled about it because of my background, I grew up, my mother's an obstetrician, gynecologist, and I grew up working in her office. And so I always got the phone calls from everybody about what is this and what should I do and should I go to the doctor and I don't understand. Blah, blah, blah. So I ended up, my friends joked that I was Dr. Ruth. Working in the office is quite harrowing. The thing about Gardasil, which you should absolutely have all of your kids have, also boys, if they'll give it to the boys, because you don't want boys to have HPV either and pass it on to their partners. But the reason that it's wonderful is because it helps vaccinate against the strains of HPV that can lead down the road to cervical cancer. That is wonderful. But it is not... they don't have, as far as I know, last I checked, it doesn't cover all of the strains of HPV, and there are a lot. And the ones that don't tend to cause cervical cancer cause genital warts. So your choice is, PV will give you perhaps disfiguring and pretty disgusting genital warts, or it doesn't give you anything of the sort, but puts you at high risk for cervical cancer. So even if your kids are vaccinated with Gardasil, which they should be, they're not protected against the kinds of HPV that give you warts, which are disgusting, they're painful to remove, and they can come back over and over and over and over again. Right? Most kids don't know anything about this stuff. They might try to scare you, but the problem is... these abstinence-only programs will tell you about STDs. They give you misinformation about how to prevent them because they think, oh, if we just scare them with this stuff, they won't have sex. They lie about the effectiveness of condoms in preventing a lot of these STDs, and they don't give them any information about which STDs. It's sort of like the old DARE program. They just tell you that all drugs are bad, and pretty much having a beer is the same as shooting heroin. Right? So,
right.
At least that was the program that my sister went through, and when I read about it, it was pretty common. Just all of them are bad, all of them lead to bad things, and of course that was a disaster in its own way, because then kids have a couple beers, realize that guy was full of shit, and then they wonder, should I be shooting that heroin? Maybe I should. He was wrong about the beer. So the information about what...
I think that's a pretty big jump, but I mean...
No. Of course it's a big jump. It's absolutely hyperbolic. I don't mean that literally. I just mean you need to give kids information about the difference between drinking a beer, smoking a joint, and snorting cocaine.
I mean, all of those things sound like a good time to me, but then again, I'm biased, so...
Absolutely, but you know what I'm saying, Jared. You know, you can try heroin once and die. No one has ever tried marijuana once and died. Most people don't try heroin once and die, but you'd understand, like, they don't give any information about the physiological effects or what they can do or the long-term effects of anything or the lack of long-term effects of other things. I mean, it is really, you got to give these kids information so they can make decisions that you know they're going to be making. You can't just pretend they're not going to make the decisions. It's the same with this.
I absolutely agree with you. Yeah, I absolutely agree with you. I mean,
yeah, chlamydia is super common. They don't explain that you can have chlamydia and not know it, and it can make you sterile. That's kind of a big deal, right? I mean,
yes, that is a very big deal, especially if you ever intend on having children.
Can end up, you know, what is wrong with my knee? My knee joint's really swollen, and it turns out you've had gonorrhea for a while, and it's settled in one of your joints. Didn't know that could happen, did ya? Can, it does to people. These things, and if you just tell, you know, if you explain proper use of condoms, how effective condoms are very effective at a lot of things, to use them correctly. But again, all of this is just glossed over. Don't have sex. So all the stuff I was pouring through today... none of this will surprise you, or probably anyone listening. But it turns out that abstinence-only education, and I looked at this very long study that was commissioned by the government who wanted this to be working, shows absolutely no effect on the age that kids initiate sex. Zero. None. It does not affect whether or not it affects almost nothing across the board. With the control group, it showed nothing. It didn't do any of the stuff it was supposed to do. I wish they had asked questions about how they felt about sex, because abstinence-only education, and you've heard me rave on about this purity crap, the tendency to make people, especially women, as Elizabeth Smart said, I was taught that I was like a wad of chewed up gum, and who is going to want that? So they already go ahead and tell people, you know, you shouldn't have sex, it's bad. If you have sex, you're giving this precious thing away that you can never get back again, and you won't be able to give it to your spouse, and all this stuff is just made up hooey based on nothing. And how young people having sex is bad. And just as an aside here, they actually said this in two studies I looked up today. I looked it up in my textbook. There is not one single piece of scientific evidence or information that says that having sex as a teenager is bad for you, that it's detrimental to your sexual development, to your mental health, to your nothing. There's no evidence that having sex as a teenager is bad for you. Evidence that having sex as a teenager in America with a poor education is bad for you because you're doing so irresponsibly. But just initiating sexual activity once you reach sexual maturity, turns out that's not necessarily bad for you. As far as to tell people they should teach kids that, because everyone would have a brain hemorrhage if I said that. But the problem is, science, I'm sorry, does not back your claim that it's bad for you necessarily to have sex when you're 17.
No, I mean, actually...
There's really no evidence.
Yeah, I mean, in the argument against that, you know, that asserts that, for example, having sex as a teenager is necessarily bad, actually, the opposite or the inverse argument it's true that, you know, that children who are young people, teenagers in particular, who, you know, who are exposed to sex education, you know, tend to be better prepared to deal with sex whenever they, you know, sort of encounter it for the first time.
Right.
And it's, you know, and I mean that by saying that, yeah. For example, like, you know, they're more likely to use condoms, they're more likely to be on birth control. You know, they're actually more likely to have sex with, from what I read today, that they're more likely to have sex with someone that they've been in a committed relationship with.
That's right. Now, that's right.
Yeah, obviously we know that, you know, teenage relationships, pretty much just like any human relationships, are fragile. But
that actually doesn't matter. The damage,
you know, but
the damage.
The fact
is,
of the matter is,
yeah.
is that there's a lot higher likelihood they'll have an emotional connection with the person that they're having sex with if they are aware, if they are, you know, if they're properly educated, you know, with regard to evidence-based sex education.
Yeah, stuff about their bodies, stuff about consequences. If somebody explains to them that that sex entails you to be responsible and accept consequences and think about that stuff without piling on all this shame, because then you have people, like I went to Catholic school in high school, right? And there were people there who would not buy, absolutely, they would never buy condoms, but they'd have sex. And, you know, you'd say, like, why didn't you? Because if you buy one, then you're admitting you're going to do it. Like, you're preparing to do it. I mean, this is where this goes, right?
I mean, that's really weird coming from a group of people who, you know, who believe in, you know, who believe in a savior because they hope they're going to go to heaven. I mean, that's kind of a weird thing.
Yeah, anyway, so my
sort
point
of hedging,
is, sorry, I'll
they're sort of hedging they're hedging their bets, but they're kind of curious that other people are also hedging their bets.
Right.
You know, better safe than sorry. I mean, it's sort of like the Pascal's wager of sex is buying a condom, right? I mean.
Yeah. So anyway, part of this sort of emotional connection thing usually comes from also not teaching people that they should be, you know, ashamed and terrified to have sex. So then they think more about, should I be doing this? Is this the thing I want to do? I need to be responsible to do this. You know, you learn, and I would hope that some people are teaching, this is not a way to get respect. This is not a way to get attention. This is not a way to get somebody to love you. Are any of these conversations happening? Because if they are, you're going to come out with better teenagers if they can hear that information. More healthy teenagers.
I think all of those are completely and totally irrelevant, and I think that, frankly, that's insulting. There are plenty of adults who use sex to get other people to love them because they believe that that's all they're worth. There are. Just a fact.
That's,
I mean, just
my
a fact.
Point,
you have
though,
to agree with that.
All they're worth? That's my point. This is not
an effective
way to get love.
But hang on. I agree with you that it's not. My point is that this is not something that is just exclusive to teenagers. People along the spectrum of age use this as an argument. I'm not arguing against what you're saying. I'm only trying to strengthen your argument, if you will.
Right, but I'm
simply pointing out that no matter what, people believe that.
But if you teach them that when they're young, maybe they'll internalize it a little bit and be less likely to keep doing it when they're 30. I'm not saying that only teenagers do that. People do that at all ages. But maybe it's a good idea to teach someone at the beginning of their sexual life that maybe that's something that's planned. So so what have we covered here? We've got the
Can I jump in here real quick? Because there's something I want to say. One of the things that I want to point out here is that if you don't convince young people that they have to be in love with someone to have sex with them, maybe they wouldn't believe. Can you hear me okay?
No, I can. What'd you say?
Okay. What I said was that if you don't have to, you know, if you don't convince kids that, you know, that sex is something only between people who love one another, which, you know, these religious sort of institutions often try to do, that sex is reserved for someone you love, which is preposterous, in my opinion. It's completely and totally crazy. I have no idea what one thing has to do with another. it's an act that you perform, and love is a lot more complex and a lot more meaningful than just sex.
Yeah, of course.
You know, if you don't convince kids that in order to have sex with someone, it means you have to love them, then maybe they won't go out, then maybe they won't believe, I should say, that they need to use sex in order to get other people to care about them.
Right.
I mean, these two things are correlative. Like, they just are. If you spend your, you know, if you indoctrinate your child with the belief that sex is supposed to be used only for someone you love, and then that child grows up and becomes an adult who believes that the only way he or she can, you know, receive proper affection from people is by having sex with them, then, I mean, that's, you know, they're simply fulfilling what they were indoctrinated with in the beginning. You know, one of the people, and I don't even know if that's really a good point, but to me, that's what it says is that if you tell someone, you know, that you should only do X based on Y, and then that person, you know, you should only have sex, you know, because someone loves you, you know, and then you go out, you know, looking for someone to love you, and that is what you believe is the most important thing to them, you know, then of course you're going to follow through with it. I mean, especially and specifically if you were indoctrinated to believe that. And that is totally absurd. You literally do not have to have a single emotional feeling for someone to have sex with them. I'm not saying you should or shouldn't. It's none of my business how you do or don't feel about it. You know, but have you ever heard, we got like 8 minutes left, so I want to kind of get through this.
Well,
have you ever heard
I'd
of this
like
woman
just...
named... I wanted to talk about Pam Stenzel. I don't know if you've ever heard of
okay.
her. I'm going to make a really
no,
quick
No, I haven't.
Here.
I want to finish my point, so don't run over so I can at least finish the last few I have about the education thing.
Okay,
go ahead.
Go ahead. No, you go.
Okay. Here's all I wanted to say. That the absence-only education is failing. It is absolutely failing across the board. And the thing is, it's not only doing nothing compared to the control group, it's actually doing harm because it's disseminating bad information about condoms and other methods of birth control. And it's these kids can't answer questions about what disease is an sexually transmitted disease and what isn't. They don't know the basics about it. And so it's causing harm and not doing what it's supposed to be doing. So you end up in this situation where you've educated kids poorly, you have it, and it completely leaves out anybody who's gay, lesbian, transgender. They don't talk about gender identity, they don't talk about sexual orientation, except to say that it's specified in the abstinence laws to get the federal money, but you only say that marriage is for a man and a woman. That's actually in the law still. And so this thing is a complete and total failure. So anybody listening, please, if you see this stuff coming up, and I looked up, there are a ton of laws that are actually being proposed now to do medically relevant and science-based education. Please make sure you write your whoever your lawmaker is going up for this stuff. Pay attention to what's happening so we're not going to mess up our next generation of kids if we can help it. Okay, go on about Pam. I'm done.
All right, can I get to talk about Pam Stenzel? Okay. I don't hate people. Well, I mean, I do. Like, I strongly dislike them, but I literally fucking hate this woman. So, I came across a video of hers, like, 2 years ago, back when I was still on Atheism Resource, by the way. And she spends like an entire hour talking to a couple videos on YouTube. Spends like an entire hour talking to kids. And thankfully, by the way, all of the not that, you know, upvotes or downvotes on YouTube or likes, dislikes are necessarily, you know, indicative of whether or not something is true, but you know, at least people might look at it and be like, yeah, it's bullshit. She spends basically an entire hour talking about the consequences of sex. Like, I had, you know, she was apparently like a CPS officer of some sort. She was like, yeah, you know, I had these kids, these young people, your age, girls, usually, who come into my office and say, oh, I'm pregnant. Oh, well, how did that happen? Oh, you had sex. And you got pregnant. Imagine that. The problem is that instead of using it as an opportunity to educate the people in the crowd about condoms and about birth control and about safe sex procedures, we'll say. She uses it as an opportunity to sort of shame everyone into believing that they just shouldn't have sex.
Wonderful.
Because, they'll get pregnant if they do, and their lives will be, you know, irrevocably, you know, destroyed as a result of that. You know, that the best thing for them to do is just to wait until they're married. I mean, you know, and she speaks like a really sharp tongue, and she's very, you know, very direct and, you know, and very blunt, very frank. You know, and this is the thing. She appears and acts like an authority figure. You know, she acts kind of, you know, forget the term, but sort of like an alpha. Like, I'm telling you this. You have to listen to me. You know, like she's a figure of authority.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I hear this kind of shit, and I'm like, you don't actually give a fuck whether or not these kids do or don't practice safe sex. The only thing you care about is that they just don't have sex. That's all you care about. You were literally not even remotely concerned about, you know, protecting them from the consequences of sex because you believe that they can just will themselves into not having sex. Or that they should feel ashamed about not having sex. And by the way, when I say will themselves into not having sex, natural fucking biological desire to have sex. Doesn't mean you can't control yourself at all. It just means that there's a natural biological desire and human beings are curious.
Yeah, and the reason
did it really just give me the 90 seconds shit? Did it really just do the 90 seconds to me?
Yeah. Oh.
Yeah, you know, it really feels like this show gets shorter and shorter every week. I don't know if it's because we just, I don't know. All right. So I guess I'm going to close. I guess I'll just close the show in sort of sad way. All right, we got 60 seconds. You've been listening to Logicast. Logicast is on every Thursday, 8 o'clock p.m. Central Standard Time, 9 o'clock p.m. Eastern Standard Time. I'm Jared Smith, my wonderful host, other host, Darby Macy, the sort of the gears of this whole operation. We'll be on next week. Check us out on Facebook, facebook.com/Logicast, and we'll see you next week. Night, Darb.
Thanks for listening, everybody. All right, good night.